The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
At the White House press briefing, and that is our big story of the hour, brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Two locations to serve you. Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Go see him today for your perfect smile. He's my buddy. He's my friend. And he is the master of dental implants. So Tulsi Gabbard, as director of national intelligence, came out. She has the receipts. The House committee declassified all this information. We have now proven connections to the Obama team in this is post-election now, post-2016 election. Coming up with this idea that Trump's a Russian agent, a Russian plant, only there because of Putin, even though they knew that that was all a lie. Manufacturing intelligence. The answer, of course, is why? Why did they do this? Because they needed to derail his presidency because he wasn't going to play their little warmonger games. Okay? If this had been any other Republican, none of this would have happened. It would have been just a normal transition. They didn't like Hillary Clinton anyway. It's not like they had great love for her. If it had been Jeb, exclamation mark, would have been fine. And the Democrats would have raised money off of defeating the Bushes. And we probably would be in God only knows what situation would have occurred. And everybody would have been just fine. It would have been a normal inauguration. And that would have been the end of it. And, you know, whatever Russia had done in that election, trying to, you know, influence to sow chaos, whatever any of these governments do, nobody would have cared because it didn't matter. It didn't matter then, and it wouldn't have mattered either way, and it didn't matter with Trump, and it certainly, but they just would not have made an issue out of it because it's about business, and business would have been fine. They had no personal animosity towards Donald Trump. They didn't. They liked the guy. At one point, they all liked him and took his money and thought he'd be great. And it wasn't a matter of Trump becoming a Republican. It was that Trump was not going to be the warmonger. I've always said this. I've said this forever. I've said this for years. I mean, I said this to him on multiple occasions. I've said it on this show 1,000 times. And you know I'm right deep down inside. I mean, again, if Nikki Haley had won the nomination, Joe Biden would have probably stayed in the race. And they would have been fine with Nikki Haley. And it would have been fine. And, you know, they would all be talking about how we're sending more money and more weapons to Ukraine. Only this time we're not making then pay for it. And, you know, we'd be expanding our footprint somewhere in the Middle East and, you know, the usual stuff. It's the usual stuff. Trump is different and was different. And that's why all this happened. Now, a couple exchanges today with so first, let me play a little more Tulsi Gabbard. Then I want to get to some of the exchanges with the reporters, because there were some good ones today from Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard. So she talks about how the implications of this are far reaching. And it has to do with the integrity of our Democratic Republic and also with an ongoing president, with an outgoing president. This outgoing president, he's leaving the White House. Why do this to Donald Trump? Again, that's the universal why. It's not because of the NBC tape. It's not because Trump was a billionaire. It's not because Trump had golf clubs. Just ask yourself why. Why would they do all this to this guy? And it's the answer I gave you. That's the reason. So anyway, this is we'll start with here, I guess. Did we cut number 4 yet? Why don't we do, I guess, did we do cut 4? I forget now.
Yeah, we did 4. 5
all right,
is next
so
up, I believe.
Let's cut number 5. There we go. Thank you.
The implications of this are far-reaching and have to do with the integrity of our Democratic Republic. It has to do with an outgoing president taking action to manufacture intelligence to undermine and usurp the will of the American people in that election and launch what would be a years-long coup against the incoming president of the United States, Donald Trump.
All right. Year-long coup against Donald Trump, okay? Year-long coup against Donald Trump. So the question that Caitlin Collins asked about Tulsi Gabbard, and it was an annoying question from an annoying person, Caitlin Collins. And it was basically like, are you just doing all this because President Trump lost confidence in you? Are you just doing all this because President Trump told people that he didn't believe your assessment of Epstein? Is that why you're doing all this? Huh? Is that why this is all happening? And which clip would that be, Matt, just so I can make sure I play the right one here?
I think it's 32.
All right, 32. Take a listen.
First on Secretary Rubio, he put out a statement in 2020.
Actually, Matt, can you grab her question? Can you get Caitlin Collins?
She jumps in on this. Don't worry. We'll hear from Caitlin before.
Okay. Very good. All right, so she has two questions in this. The first one is, why did Marco Rubio's committee conclude that they didn't have any that Russia had no role to play in this? And the second one was, are you just doing this because President Trump has lost confidence in you? Cut 32.
First on Secretary Rubio, he put out a statement in 2020 following that Senate Intelligence Committee report, and he said what they found is troubling. We found irrefutable evidence of Russian meddling, which the Director of National Intelligence just confirmed for all of you that Russia was trying to sow distrust and chaos. But what's the outrage in this that Secretary Rubio did not say at the time, the Democrats were saying at the time, is the fact that the intelligence community was concocting this narrative that the president colluded with the Russians, that the president's son was holding secret meetings with the Russians, all of these lies that were never true. And he also said at that time, we discovered deeply troubling actions taken by the FBI under Comey, particularly their acceptance and willingness to rely on the Steele dossier without verifying its methodology or sourcing. The Steele dossier that many outlets in this room ran as the gospel truth, and it was cooked up and paid for by the Clinton campaign. As for your second question, Caitlin, I think, who is saying that she would release this to try to boost her standing with the president? Who has said that?
Well, the president has publicly undermined her when it came to Iran. He said she was wrong. He told me that she didn't know what she was talking about. That was on Air Force One on camera.
The only people who are suggesting that the Director of National Intelligence would release evidence to try to boost her standing with the president are the people in this room who constantly try to sow distrust and chaos amongst the president's cabinet. And it is not working. I will just answer your question directly. I am with the president of the United States every day. He has the utmost confidence in Director Gabbard. He always has. He continues to. And that is true of his entire cabinet, who is all working as one team to deliver on the promises this president made.
I think I said Epstein. Here's what President Trump said about Tulsi Gabbard. This is cut number 11. Take a listen. Cut 11.
Director of National Intelligence. Oh, where's Tulsi? She's like hotter than everybody. She's the hottest one in the room right now because she found out with certainty. I think we knew it before, in all fairness, Tulsi, but now you have certainty. She has all the documents. She has everything that you need. And she found out that Barack Hussein Obama led a group of people and they cheated in the elections, and they cheated without question. It's not even a quote. Would you say there's even a little question there, Tulsi? She says no. And you found things that nobody thought we'd ever find. And very happy and very honored to have you with us. She's right now, by far, Speaker. She's hotter than you right now, Speaker. She's the hottest person in the room right now, Speaker. So, Tulsi, great job. And I know you have a lot more coming. She told me you've seen nothing yet. So I heard those rumors about you, but now I know they're true. So we're very proud of you, Tulsi. They cheated so badly. And ultimately, it led to a loss in 2020, and it shouldn't have been a loss. It was a big victory. We won by a lot. We had to do it again. But if I thought we lost, I would never have run again. And this is a far more consequential election than it would have been if we did. That's the only thing I can say in favor of it. But
remember, Hillary Clinton was out there blaming the Russians for her election loss. You know how like everybody always says all the time, you can't question the 2020 election because then you're election conspiracy denialist and you're an insurrectionist and you can't question this. And I said to you after the 2024 election, I said, man, we're missing a couple million votes here. Are we not, based from 2020 and a year of COVID when people were staying home and we had mail-in balloting, in 2024, somehow millions of votes just vanished. But Hillary Clinton for years was out there saying that the reason why she lost was Russia. I mean, we played this montage once. Matt, see if you can actually grab it for me. She went on, I think she blamed 57 different reasons for why she lost the election. And one of them was Russia. And she was out there saying it. Jimmy Carter, former president Jimmy Carter, still dead, Jimmy Carter was out there saying that Trump was an illegitimate president because of Russia. Jimmy Carter! You had Democrats up and down saying all this. That was the goal. That was the goal. You're sitting there, it's December of 2016, it's January of 2017. You're figuring out now, what do you do with the fact that you got this guy coming into the White House now who's not going to play your little warmonger games, and he's going to probably expose all the deep state crap you've been doing. And sure, the Republican establishment is coming to surround themselves, to surround him, to try to keep everybody at bay. But, you know, he's a little bit of a loose cannon. He's a little bit of a bull in a china shop. What do we do with this guy? You manufacture Russian, this Russia hoax. That's what you do. Now the media is spinning this to suggest that all Tulsi Gabbard is doing is trying to take everybody's attention away from Epstein. That's all this is. And nothing more. So here's ABC's Mary Bruce. This cube cut 17 here. ABC's Mary Bruce suggesting that, basically. And that's all this is the cover-up for Epstein. I don't believe that for a second. But let me tell you something. If it is, it won't work, A. B, it'll be worse. Because, first of all, I trust Tulsi Gabbard just from the encounters that we've had together. But let's just hypothetically say that this is all BS and she is just making all this up just to deflect from Epstein. That'll be far worse. Because if nothing comes of this and nothing comes of Epstein, and this is all just stuff that we learn about and then there's no accountability and nothing happens and it just all gets swept under the rug, you can kiss the midterms goodbye. You can kiss 2028 goodbye. You can kiss the MAGA movement goodbye. A whole lot of people out there who are never coming back to this party ever again. You know what I mean? Never coming back to this party. I don't know how many other talk show hosts are willing to say that, but I'll say it because it's true. If nothing comes of this, if this is all some ruse to distract us from Epstein, then we are so royally effed it's not even funny. And the Democrats will get back in charge, and then what will happen is that they'll just expose all this as a fugazi, and then, you know, but people will tap out and never come back. And I've been saying that because it's true. I don't believe it is a distraction because I trust Tulsi Gabbard, and I don't think she would put her integrity and her reputation. She would not do that, put all that on the line to just distract from Jeffrey Epstein. Like, that doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. She's a talented woman. She could do whatever she wants at this point. She'd have a TV show. She'd start a podcast. She could write a book. She doesn't need this job. It's not like the director of national intelligence that pays, what, $180,000 a year. I mean, it's not like it's that or it's welfare for Tulsi Gabbard. She's got lots of options. She's not going to go out there today and spend 15 minutes laying out in great detail and accusing a former president of the United States, former CIA director. And let's not forget the other piece of this, which is that John Ratcliffe is not going to do that either. The current CIA director, John Ratcliffe, he's the one that kind of opened this can of worms when he came out and said that Brennan and Clapper and Comey manufactured all this intelligence. Ratcliffe isn't going to do that. None of these people need their jobs that badly. Like, you may do things at your job that you're not happy with because you just really can't lose this job. These people are not in that position. It's not like Tulsi, if Trump fires her tomorrow, well, then you're going to see her as a Walmart greeter. And somehow she's just going to manage to get by. And she may not even get that job. I always laugh at that, though. That notion that's like, well, she really needs this job. She's not some single mom in like the Bronx who can barely afford her rent and, you know, has to put up with a jackass boss at the fast food restaurant where she works because she really needs this job because she got a deadbeat husband who's not paying child support and she can barely make ends meet. She's Tulsi Gabbard. She's a household name. She leaves the White House tomorrow and starts the Tulsi Gabbard for Truth podcast, and she's got millions of subscribers on day one. She'll be as big as Megyn Kelly on day two. She'll be fine. But if she risks her reputation and says all these things that are not true because she really needs this job, then she's done. Her credibility, you're not getting that back. John Ratcliffe's not doing this because he really needs his job. If he's not CIA director, well then, oof, got to go back to, I don't know what. He'll be that guy on. You ever see on 676, guy that just stands there asking for money, somehow does not get hit by cars. I don't know how. Miraculously, John Ratcliffe will be okay. He'll be all right. He's the CIA director. He probably go get a seat on a board of a big military contractor making, I don't know, $300,000 a year to show up four times a year at a quarterly meeting. Yeah. I don't think these guys are really going to risk their reputations, peddle out false information to just distract us all from Epstein. But here's what Mary Bruce suggests, though. ABC's Mary Bruce, cut 12.
Trump, clearly frustrated by the Epstein story, today tried to shift the spotlight onto Barack Obama, baselessly accusing the former president of treason in the 2016 election.
He's guilty. This was treason. This was every word you can think of. They tried to steal the election.
Trump falsely claiming Obama deliberately manufactured and politicized intelligence reports about Russian interference in the 2016 election. Tonight, in a rare rebuke, Obama firing back, his spokesman pointing to the widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 presidential election, but did not successfully manipulate any votes, noting those findings were affirmed by Republicans in Congress, including Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Spokesman adding, these bizarre allegations are ridiculous and a weak attempt at distraction.
Yeah, they're just making this up because they really, really, really need this job. They really need it. Man, can't lose my job. Can't imagine what that would be for me and my family. So stupid. Here's a couple of other exchanges today with Tulsi Gabbard. She was asked if Obama engaged in criminal behavior. This is cut number 30. She's careful, obviously, to outline the fact that she's not an attorney, and she's not. Cut 30.
Do you believe that any of this new information implicates former President Obama in criminal behavior?
We have referred and will continue to refer all of these documents to the Department of Justice and the FBI. To investigate the criminal implications of this.
For even former the evidence, President Obama?
Correct. The evidence that we have found and that we have released directly point to President Obama leading the manufacturing of this intelligence assessment. There are multiple pieces of evidence and intelligence that confirm that fact.
There you go. Okay? There you go. Cut 31, she's asked about Obama's statement, because obviously Obama came out yesterday and said this is all a bunch of nonsense. By the way, Gerald Posner is going to be here at 4:30. We're going to talk about the MLK files. And Victoria Coates is going to join us, Dr. Victoria Coates. We'll ask her about all this because she obviously knows John Ratcliffe quite well. She was in the national security world. She's out to trot over this, too. So we got to, this is going to be a great show for you still. And we're only 22 minutes into the second hour, so we can only imagine what's still to come. But Tulsi was asked about Obama coming out and saying this is all nonsense. It's interesting how Obama is trying to do damage control here, is it not? Cut 31.
A spokesperson for former President Obama said in a statement earlier this week, quote, nothing in the documents issued last week undercuts the widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 election, but did not successfully manipulate any votes. How do you respond to critics like former President Obama and also others on the Hill who say that the administration is conflating apples and oranges here, conflating allegations of actual hacking of voter machines and allegations of interference generally?
I think it's a disservice to the American people that former President Obama's office and others who are criticizing the transparency that is being delivered by releasing these documents. They are doing a disservice to the American people and trying to deflect away from their culpability in what is a historic scandal and negative action towards the American people and our Democratic Republic. The answer to that statement can very clearly be found throughout all of the documents that we have released. Again, showing that Russia has took action to try to sow discord in the election, but showed no preference for or against any singular candidate.
So then the question about weaponizing government. Like, aren't you the one who said you weren't going to weaponize government? Didn't you say that? You had a problem with weaponized government, Tulsi Gabbard. Weren't you the one saying that all this time? Now, I'm telling you right now, Tulsi Gabbard has to play cleanup in aisle 12 because our government has been so weaponized since really, I mean, the last, you know, 15 years, but ramped up, obviously, since Trump's election in 2016. So she's got a what she's doing now is she's outing the people that weaponized our government. But to not punish these people would be a disgrace to the Constitution. Going after people who weaponized the government and spied on you and used their powers to affect an election and then undermine a duly elected president, that's not weaponization. That's called justice. That's justice. It's a big difference with that. Let's understand that. Cut 35.
You've long been an opponent of weaponization in government. How do you respond to criticism that referring Obama administration officials and even potentially the former president is just more weaponization and this is a potential race to the bottom?
I think that's a very disrespectful attack on the American people who deserve the truth. They deserve to have faith and trust in the integrity of our democratic republic, which has been undermined by President Obama through his direction of this manufactured fake intelligence document, knowing that it was filled with lies and knowing that it would and could then be used for all of the actions that came after.
And I would just add, there needs to be accountability for that weaponization, Phil, that we've seen. And no one has been a victim of the weaponized government more than President Trump, not just because of this political scandal. You all recall his house was raided. So I think, you know, it's very disingenuous for people to say, how dare they speak of former President Obama about this based on evidence and based on intelligence when the former president of the United States, Donald Trump's home was raided when he was forced to sit in a Manhattan courtroom and many other courtrooms across the country for crimes he never committed when he was impeached and indicted, and the entire country witnessed that. That's the weaponization of justice. Now the president is back because the American people see the truth. Nearly 80 million Americans reelected him back to this office, and he believes that we need to have justice and accountability. And I think the nearly 80 million Americans who reelected him agree with that.
Yeah, it's called accountability. And by the way, there better be some. We're all going to be really unhappy. Just FYI. Let me tell you about the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Our next live show is August 15th, and I want to see you there, okay? We had to move our politics and pints next week, but we are going to be in Cape May August 15th. So if you want to get together, you want to hang out, and we're going to have some great guests there, including our buddy Paula Scanlon in person and some other surprises, mark your calendars now. And mark your calendars for your September to Remember getaway at the Grand Hotel. September's a great time of year. The crowds are gone. The weather is perfect. I mean, it's beautiful out. And you get resort credits and you save 10% off room rates with their September to Remember package. And you can still use the beautiful outdoor heated pool. You can still use the beautiful indoor heated pool. But it's easier to get restaurant reservations. But I recommend eating at Hemingway's because the food there is fantastic. And you'll love the people there, and you'll love being in Cape May in the fall. It's absolutely gorgeous. All you got to do right now is go to GrandHotelCapeMay.com for all the details. And if you're thinking about an event, well, call my friend Caitlin. Caitlin was named the 2025 South Jersey Face of Weddings. She is a certified wedding planner. She'll help you plan the wedding of your dreams, beachfront wedding, but also too things like baby showers and bridal showers and family reunions. They have four ballrooms, including the fifth floor ballroom where we'll be on August 15th, Friday the 15th for our next live show, overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. Gorgeous, beautiful views, great staff, excellent service. That's what you get at my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. So make your reservation today. Check out their September to Remember fall getaway packages by going to GrandHotelCapeMay.com, and I'll see you August 15th.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Okay. By the way, the truth about Ozzy Osbourne and the bat is a whole lot more complicated than you've been led to believe. I'm waiting for Gerald Posner to write a book about that. Biting the Bat, Gerald Posner. There you go. There's the title for you. Biting the Bat.
I love it. You know, I love the idea, Rich, that you come up with the title, and then all I have to do is sort of fill in the book, but I like it.
Because that's the easy part, you know, filling the book. The hard part's the title.
It is. Let me tell you, 9 times out of 10, the title will stump you, no doubt.
Great to have you back on the show, my friend. Of course, award-winning investigative writer, journalist, best-selling author. You wrote a book years ago called Killing the Dream about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., James Earl Ray, and the assassination of Dr. King, Killing the Dream. And now that the MLK files have been declassified, I said, I got to go to you and get your take on this, because I know, unlike other people, you're actually going to take the time to review the files that are declassified. The rest of us just don't have the time for that. We can come up with creative titles, but not actually do the work. So have you had a chance to really digest the files?
Yeah, you know, I know I'm getting slower as I'm getting older. I'm probably about 50,000 pages through, which is
That's
a lot.
That's it? Only 50,000 pages, 50, Gerald Posner? 000, it's been 2 days.
Right? It's hard to believe, right? I should be doing all-nighters and be able to read faster. I saw a quote, as a matter of fact, the other day in a newspaper article about David Garrow, who's an historian who's written about Martin Luther King, and he says, I see nothing new in these. And I thought, man, is he a speed reader? Because, you know, it takes a while. I'm looking through it and trying to do it by groups, the things that I think will be most interesting. It's just for anybody out there who thinks about this, not only is it 250,000 pages, but the way the government dumps it, they put it out in PDF forms that are not searchable. So you have to open up every file and then either convert it by OCR so it's searchable, or you have to be able to try to read it. And I'd say 20% of these files, Rich, are so bad in terms of quality, legibility. They're not easy. You can't put them into an AI machine or something and say, by the way, tell me what's in them, because it can't read most of them. You know, your eyes are getting blurry just to try to go through them. So it's a challenge, to say the least.
I understand. And so you got to be selective then in terms of what you're looking for, so to speak. But you don't know necessarily what you're looking for. But I'm sure that you had some starting points, right?
Yeah. So the starting point for me are the FBI files, because more than anything else, let me tell you, with King, we know that J. Edgar Hoover, then head of the FBI, hated Martin Luther King, thought he was at least a communist sympathizer. I mean, people who are young and only think of Martin Luther King as a national holiday and celebrated have no idea how controversial he was in his time. He was a great civil rights leader who led a peaceful sort of, you know, revolution to be able to change our view of racial inequality. But at the same time, the FBI thought that there were communist advisors around him, that they were hardcore, that he was being misled by them. And Hoover thought he was a threat. And as a result, the FBI broke the law repeatedly on King. They had an RFK, Robert Kennedy Jr., was attorney general at the time, knew about it, tried to put a stop to it after a couple of years. But for a couple of years, it ran wild. And it was surveillance, telephone taps, video surveillance. And there are, in these files, full pages that are still redacted and blacked out. I think some of those are the most salacious parts, the sort of the summaries from FBI agents about details of King's visits to, you know, times like brothels, names of people who were with him, names of his friends. There were rumors of children out of wedlock. There is all types of salacious material. And it's one of the reasons the King family didn't want all these out, because it has nothing to do with the assassination necessarily, but has a lot to do with his legacy. And so I've been looking through these FBI files. It just is a reminder of when the FBI, any government agency like that, gets unchecked power and they start to come after you, boy, I tell you, you just have to, you know, hope for the best, because they broke every rule when it came to MLK.
And it wasn't just him, right? I mean, there were other people at the time, Aretha Franklin and right, others as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it was not just King. You're right. There's a whole list. And when it came out in the 70s, this Contropo program, the Merkin files, as they called them, and how much they had gotten away with, you know, Hoover at this time looking at all types of people. And you're right, like Aretha Franklin and others, we would think of how the hell did they ever put them on a suspect list. But I think King is one of those we focus on, at least I do as an investigator, so much because he has become a national holiday. He is revered today in many ways. and you think, boy, you forget where it was at one point. The other thing is he got assassinated. So it's a fair question as an investigator to ask the question, hey, did some FBI agents who knew how much the boss hated King say, I'll take care of this problem for you. Did they allow James Earl Ray, a racist, was trying to collect a bounty of $50,000 on King's head, which is what I believe, did they allow him to get close to King? Those types of issues. In the end, there's no evidence of that. Hoover knew. J. Edgar Hoover may have been a tough FBI director, was at times did some terrible things, but he was smart enough to know that he wanted to disgrace King. He wanted to bring him down in his own time by unfurling all this personal, salacious material around him, and he would lose his reputation. He knew that by killing King, he would turn him into a national holiday, if that made sense. So sure. He didn't want King dead. He wanted him destroyed publicly and sort of disgraced.
Who was James Earl Ray, for those that don't know? And how did he end up in London?
Well, that's the part everyone says, come on, a guy who's a four-time loser, comes from this extremely poor, like a 100-year criminal history of the Ray family. His great-grandfather was hanged as part of this gang that used to, rob and kill people on bank robberies. His uncle went to prison big time. His father was a con. Both of his brothers were, felons. He went away repeatedly. And then he's put in for the fourth time into one of the toughest prisons around Jeff City in Missouri, and he escapes in 1967. He's on the lam, and he goes to Canada. He goes down to Mexico, where he's dealing in marijuana, maybe in heroin, but most likely just in weed. He's keeping himself alive. He goes out. He's traveling around the country, on the lam. Gets to L.A. where he gets a nose job at some point. So some people say, oh, maybe he was already planning, to lose people in terms of the way he looked. But he went to the Arthur Murray dance courses and took dance lessons a few months before he went to kill King. He went and got a bartending license. There's a picture of him. It looks like a tuxedo. It's actually a bartending outfit. And he closes his eyes at the moment the picture's taken with his diploma because he doesn't really want people to identify him that easily. And then a month later, he's following King because his brothers have told him about this bounty on King's head. And for a guy like Ray, who was an ex-con who grew up super poor, what we call white trash in the old days when it was politically, you weren't incorrect to say something like that. But the poorest part of white America in Alton, Illinois, and that the only people lower on the totem pole than people like the Ray family and the Ray brothers were blacks. And so he had this denigrating view of blacks that, collecting a bounty to take out someone like Martin Luther King wasn't that big of a jump for him. And where did he try to get to? He tried to get to Rhodesia or South Africa, which were white run minority governments then. He didn't have the money to get there. So he went to London instead. He got to Canada where he knew how to move around. He'd been there previously when he escaped a year earlier from prison. And he had enough money to buy a ticket to London. And from there, he's trying to get down to Rhodesia and South Africa. And finally, he's caught at Heathrow when he's trying to leave London. So he's a clever guy, but not clever enough to finally get away with it.
One of the questions I think a lot of people have is, how did he escape the day of the assassination?
On the assassination itself, it turns out to be easier than you can imagine. It's a pretty rundown area where Martin Luther King was, this hotel, Lorraine Motel, and Ray checked into a flop house, as they used to call it, that was sort of an itinerant house you'd pay for by the hour. And he actually set up his sniper's nest in the one bathroom that all of those little shared rooms would work there, locked the door, and in the bathtub set up the shot that he took of King, which was one shot straight across on a good rifle, high power scope, and it's a deadly shot. And then he leaves that, throws the rifle away, gets in his Mustang, which he has, which is his prized possession, and he then recounts later how he drives on back roads from Memphis back to Atlanta, because it's in Atlanta where he dumps his car that is his beloved possession in a public housing project, wipes it free of fingerprints, and gets on a bus that takes him overnight into Canada. So he's gone before anyone even realizes who he is. He's traveling on an alias then. He's got a number of aliases. He goes into Canada under a fake ID, Canada actually changed its immigration policy and was required to get a passport after 1968 because of what Ray had done to be able to move in there and then travel on to London.
Oh, no kidding. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So Gerald Posner's with us, and we're talking about this. I mean, I'm glad, you know, that these files are coming out, whether it's JFK, RFK, MLK.
Yep.
I think we're all happy that, you know, they're releasing all these things. I mean, there's still all these redactions. You're never going to satisfy people who believe there's some sort of a conspiracy there. We know the conspiracy theories around JFK. What is the conspiracy theory, if there is one, around the assassination of MLK? Was it the idea that the FBI would have been behind it?
Well, yes. I mean, that was the general theory, but then there was a specific one that came up actually at the time that I was writing this book around not quite 30 years ago, but in 1998. And that, what I call the most powerful of the conspiracy theories on Ray, convinced the King family that James Earl Ray was innocent. If you remember, Dexter King, King's son, went into prison before James Earl Ray died, shook his hand, and said, "We believe you. We think you're innocent." And the theory was this guy who owned a grill, just like a fast grill, that was just a couple of doors down from the flophouse from where Ray had shot King. His guy, Lloyd Jowers, said, "Oh, forget about Ray. It was me. I shot King, and I had these guys come to me and tell me to do it and everything else. They gave me the gun. I went in the back when all the people were inside my grill. I took the shot at King, and then I came back inside." This guy, Ray, was completely set up. Fantastic story. It's great. Jowers been interviewed before and everything else. Well, guess what? The Memphis district attorney, in reinvestigating the case, because they said, "Oh, my God, maybe it's true," and the King family believes it, they found out that Jowers, in these conversations that they intercepted, was trying to sell his story. He thought he'd get $500,000 from a book publisher. He was talking to somebody about doing a movie on it. He's saying to the people that are trying to put it together, "Don't worry, no one will ever be able to tell this is fake," type of thing. The whole thing fell apart. But the King family has never backed off of the idea. I don't know if they still believe in Jowers, but they never backed off the idea that they think that there was the hand of the government involved in this. And I get it. If your father or your relative was the subject of this illegal campaign from the FBI at the highest levels, like Hoover, who were trying to destroy him, yeah, I could understand how you would think that they must have gone ahead and done the next thing and then just killed him. So it's a very personal thing for the King family. I never criticize them for coming to that conclusion. I just think that they've been duped, and they were duped primarily by a lawyer who had represented James Earl Ray, of all people.
And is there anything in the files that would lend credence to their theory?
It's amazing. I've looked through everything I'm looking for on the FBI and everything else. I'm looking for all these files, and I'm doing word searches to the extent I can on Jowers to see if there's anything there. If somebody says, "Oh, by the way, did you see this? His name is not even there so far. I can't find it in anything." So it's interesting to go through them and see what's not there. It's also interesting to find out, by the way, Rich, what is in there that you think to yourself, "Wow, did they get that wrong?" I'll give you one example. There's a CIA file in which they send it over to the FBI afterwards. The assassination takes place, and then they start to look through their files, the CIA, to see if they've got anything on this guy, Ray, or on any of the aliases he used, Galt and that. And they say, "Hey, this guy that we photographed going into the Cuban mission in Mexico City in October of 1967 or that, he looks like that guy, James Earl Ray." So they send a picture to the FBI saying, "Hey, we think that maybe this guy actually went to the Cuban mission in Mexico City in October of 67. Here he is." Now, let me tell you, I don't even think it looks anything like him. It's not Ray. He wasn't there. He was in Mexico, which is interesting, dealing weed in Acapulco and Puerto Vallarta at that point, but he's not in Mexico City. This is the same CIA that had sent two pictures after the Kennedy assassination of the guy who was supposed to be Oswald going into the Soviet mission in Mexico City in September of 63 and sent a guy who wasn't Oswald. So I love, you know, it's sort of the same agency, same mistakes after two assassinations. You've got to get something right at some point. Now, if you look at this from a conspiracy, you say, I look at the CIA and I think incompetence. I can't believe they keep getting this stuff wrong. If you think it's a conspiracy, you think, oh, you know, they must just be doing that to let everybody mislead them down the wrong path. I just don't think they're that clever.
General Posner is with us, and it's always great to have him. You have a piece you wrote, skeptic.com, the CIA, JFK, and the Fiction Factory, the illusion of a smoking gun. You just published this a couple days ago. Actually, today, I'm sorry, it just came out today, a few hours ago, I should say. So you've now gone through all the JFK files that have been released. You've written the book Case Closed on this. You're going through the MLK files. I assume you've gone through the RFK files as well. What is the connection here to all of this? And is it the incompetence that leads people to keep saying this? Is it the government that keeps all this stuff secret from us? Is it all these things that come together that make people say, even when all these documents are released, oh, give me a break? You know, they're all those redactions. I mean, because you're never, ever going to change. It seems to me like in this day and age, you're not going to change people's minds.
Right. Right. I agree with that. And Rich, here's the part that's amazing, is the documents came out. And so, for instance, we've been waiting for a long time to get a file on a CIA officer who was handling these anti-Castro Cubans in Miami at the time, this guy called George Joannides. And some people thought for a while, he's the guy. He's the key to the whole thing. He's running Operation Oswald. He must be the guy who put Oswald up in the sniper's nest, whatever. So the CIA hadn't delivered on that file. I signed a letter back in 2002 with other people like Norman Mailer and others, released the file. So the CIA, I hate how they hold on to stuff. They fight you for it. It's Cold War secrets, and they make everybody think it's a big thing. Now the file's finally released. Credit to Representative Luna on that, and Paulina Luna. She's great. She got it out. But the thing is, the people who thought for a long time that he was, there's nothing in there. There's no mention of Oswald, no Operation Oswald. There's nothing about him. He finds out about Oswald after the assassination. But the people who thought for a long time that he would be key, they don't just drop the idea. Like you said, you can't convince them. So they say, well, there has to be more here. There's something here. There's something there. They're doing spin on it. And the Washington Post and Axios published articles that bought what they were saying hook, line, and sinker. So my complaint is not that the document comes out and doesn't show you. I don't expect people to read the document. But that the media, even the legacy media like the Washington Post, enhances the conspiracy theory because they don't do real journalism. They don't check it. Very quick example. Some of the people say, oh, in that file that was released, you know, as a matter of fact, there was an anti-Castro Cuban who said that Oswald gave him a 2-page memo on infiltrating them before the assassination. They knew about him. The CIA agent would have known about him. Well, guess what? That guy, that Cuban, is now 83 years old. He was interviewed by the FBI in 63 and 64 and 67. The House Select Committee interviewed him in 78. He said, I never knew about Oswald until after the assassination. Now, all of a sudden, his memory's gotten better. And at 83, he tells a different story. The Washington Post doesn't even mention the fact that, you know, he, under oath, had given completely different contradictory statements earlier. It's just bad journalism. So no wonder everybody thinks it's a conspiracy. Even when the documents come out and prove there's nothing there, it still gets spun as a conspiracy in press stories.
In your piece, you write that Anna Paulina Luna, Congresswoman Paulina Luna, deserves credit for raising a lot of these questions and getting that document released. But then you go on to say that's eclipsed by her rush to promote disproven conspiracy. So what is she still pushing at this point? Because I know that she's been very vocal in saying that, you know, when these files come out, you're going to get the truth. It's going to show that the idea of a lone gunman is nonsense, basically, right?
So you know, and I agree. There's so many things that she does that I like on trans, on that whole thing about, you know, trans ideology and the crazy things on gender and that. Mm-hmm. She's spot on. She's good on so many different issues. On this particular issue, I give her credit for using the Oversight Committee to force the CIA to come out with documents they should have given out decades ago. But then she doesn't just go to say, I think there's more there. She still gives that line that she thinks that Oswald's a patsy and there are multiple shooters. Now, I assure you, Rich, it's not just me reading the documents. There's nothing in anything that's come out recently that talks about multiple shooters. So she is sort of what I call bought into, prejudged the case before she waited for the documents to come out. She thinks that, you know, it's the Oliver Stone type view of it. And look, there are a lot of people that will agree with her. I just think that when you're running the oversight committee, you've got to, what do I know about this? That's why she's in Congress and I'm not. But you have to stick closer to what the facts show. And she's really gone much farther than that.
Before I let you go, and we'll post a link to your story on this, is there anything in the RFK files? I mean, you know, did Sirhan do it? I never really paid much attention to that because there was evidence, right? I mean, there's video evidence of him shooting RFK, if I'm not mistaken, right? So it's kind of a – that one was not as complex. But anything in those files that would make anyone curious?
No. So a lot of the files are out still in, you know, Los Angeles state case at the time, you know, when it was brought in that. So not everything comes out in the federal files. But what you just said a second ago, Rich, is key, which is think about this. You get the guy with the gun tackled at the scene after firing the shots that, you know, fatally wound Robert Kennedy. You would think that's the end of it. But then over time, the story becomes, well, all those shots really didn't kill him. The shot that killed him was fired by a security guard who must have taken his, and he was part of a larger plot. So no wonder in the cases like Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, when they're killed by people with a rifle shot from a distance and the assassins get away in the immediate aftermath of the shooting, no wonder the conspiracy speculation starts immediately, right? But in the case even of RFK, in which you're right, the question you think would become, was Sirhan doing it for himself or for somebody else? Eventually, the theories get so large that Sirhan, by the way, he was part of a mind control program that the CIA had. He was given a special word and was in hypnosis and didn't even know what he did. When he woke up from it, he didn't remember anything. So he becomes an innocent patsy who was firing a pistol but didn't really know what he was doing.
Well, I said last question, but last question. I mean, I think we all agree, and this is something you and I have talked about before, Gerald Posner, which is that the longer these things go on, the more ideas fester. And there's a lot of reasons to distrust our government. I mean, just think of everything right. Tulsi Gabbard, you know, talked about today, for example.
Yep.
We are
Boy,
over
she's been
a year
great
now.
On that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, unbelievable, right?
Just great. She's delivering. Anybody had like any thoughts about Tulsi or that? This is such a key and important issue. Sorry about that. Sorry about the sidelight. And I just think that what she's been laying out is critically important.
No, it is. It absolutely is. And bravo to her. And I mean, yep. The idea that these people could think that they could get away with this is just it's amazing. The hubris.
They might have gotten away with it if this administration didn't get in, was able to turn on that, you know, sunshine, the spotlight and look at the files and make them public and start to. They might have gotten away with it, which is really, you know, the part I get it. It should scare every American when you look at that and realize that you talk about the politicization of, you know, this system and weaponizing the entire process so you're going to retain power is the very worst of what happens in bad governments in, you know, in third world countries and everything else. And it should be front page news across the board. We're obviously not going to see it covered in a lot of places, but it should be.
No, and you're seeing the legacy media now acting as if this is all a ruse to distract from Epstein. And it's shameful because they should be the ones jumping up and down and screaming, this can't happen in a democracy. And yet they're not. They're trying to play defense here for Obama.
That's right. They're using Epstein as a shield. It's such a fake story because they've jumped onto. I don't mean. Look, I want to see the Epstein files as well. I want to see all the material out. But the way the legacy media is using it, they're using it as their like kryptonite shield against you know everything else. And so they'll harp on that to the exclusion of, you know, even the other day when the MLK files came out, which I thought was a fantastic thing, good for, you know, the administration, they're making it available. I was seeing on X people saying, the MLK files are a diversion from Epstein. They're just releasing material to keep you distracted. And I'm thinking to myself, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, look, I agree with you, my friend. Bravo to Tulsi. She's doing it. She's the right person for the job at the right time.
Yep.
Like, thank God.
Yep.
You know, thank God she's there. We'll have to talk again in the future. I know you're still trying to get information on Thomas Crooks. I know you still have your FOIA request.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.